Hi, podcast listeners. Thanks for listening to the program today. You can look forward to these stories. A terrible situation in Queensland, Australia, where they're talking about not giving organ transplants to people who are not fully vaccinated. Yeah.
We really don't want to, but we're going to talk about Jussie Smollett and Chris Cuomo. And then I have a really good question I want to ask Tony about: how does a Christian handle obnoxious neighbors?
We're going to do all of that. And as we do, would you do us a favor? Would you give us a good review about our podcast? And would you tell your neighbors about it? Because that'll help us spread the word. We appreciate it. Just like in the song, turn it up! Because we got another big hour of Christian Worldview with Tony and Austin. We want you to be able to hear it. We want your neighbors to hear it. We want your children to hear it. Well, we'll tell you when your children don't need to hear it. This is Tony Beam, Director of Church and Community Engagement for the Tim Brazier Campus of North Greenville University, where Christ makes the difference. I also serve as Director of Public Policy, along with my colleague, Lisa Van Riper, and I'm the Director of Public Policy for the South Carolina Baptist Convention. My co-host is Austin Barker.
Hi, everybody.
And we have Drew McKissick on the phone. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I am doing well this morning. How are y'all?
We're doing just fine. Drew McKissick, by the way, is the chairman of the South Carolina Republican Party. So when you have a big title like that, you don't have to be like me and have a whole bunch of titles. When you're just a little guy, you got to go out and get all these titles so you feel big. But then when you're Drew McKissick, you just get to be chairman of the South Carolina, and that's it, because that's a big job. Okay, that's
then
enough.
You can have all the rocks thrown at you. So
yeah,
it's
man,
a trade-off, Tony. It's a trade-off.
No, I got you, brother. I guarantee that's the truth. And I appreciate the fact that you're willing to be the kind of leader that you are and put up with some of that junk. Well, listen, I was actually in Columbia yesterday after we went to Camden. We had our last Gospel Changes Everything tour event down in Camden, a great event. And then we were meeting with some legislators yesterday in Columbia. But have they wrapped up a reapportionment? Is that ready to go? Or where do we stand on that?
Well, sort of. I mean, they're going to be the Senate, I know, is back again today. And I'm hoping are wrapping up their end of the business. But I heard a comment from someone yesterday. They thought that maybe one of the maps might get modified and held back over and sent back over to the House or something, but it's kind of a 50-50 chance. But I am hopeful that the Senate can wrap their business up today and then get out of town.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's and then that would be it for the legislative session until we come back in January, right? Because, I mean, it's Christmas,
exactly. After all.
Yes.
So it's gonna That's be. Right.
So nothing,
That's right.
nothing's really been done with the, what is it, $4.5 billion of COVID money that's still got to be?
I don't think so. And again, that's, of course, you had the limited number of things that they could take up during the signing die resolution, which also affected the issue of whether or not they could take up anything specifically regarding vaccine mandates, for instance. Was an issue whether they could legally take that up, under the signing die resolution. But then there's talk, though, that I've heard that the House may, come back Thursday and do something with that specifically relates to funding. Because under the signing die resolution, the only other thing that they can touch is that the other reapportionment is that relates to funding.
Yeah.
So, if they had a bill that related to mandates and said, funding could not be used to enforce mandates or something along those lines, that would legally be germane, that they might be able to do that. So that's the only other sort of thing hanging out there, as far as I know, that they may take up.
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was going to ask you, because Will Folks and Fitz News is all over this. They're out there saying South Carolina's Republican control. General Assembly has refused to do anything about the vaccine mandates. So, and according to Fitz News, dozens of activists and South Carolinians who stand to lose their jobs descended upon the State House. I didn't know that dozens could descend. I thought you had to. We might want to think about that language. How many does it take to descend on a State House? But so what is, you're saying that this whole thing about how Republicans are refusing to do anything about mandates is more about the restrictions that are placed on what the legislature can do by South Carolina law, as opposed to them not being willing to do something about it.
Well, correct. And look, first off, back up just a little bit. I mean, as you look at the things that are being done and have been done so far, you know, individually by the governor, with suits that he has filed, with executive orders that he has put in place regarding state agencies and other things along those lines, what Attorney General Alan Wilson has done with the multiple lawsuits that he has filed, and the results that we've seen of those suits now in the federal judiciary. Two different circuits now have delivered, you know, just the stunning blows to Biden's mandate, federal mandates, such that they are not legally enforceable currently, right now. And there's only, I think, one other lawsuit domino, which is ready to fall in another circuit. We may get an opinion from any day now. And then really, is at that point, all of that is on stay until it arrives in the U.S. Supreme Court. And, you know, based on what we saw with Roe versus Wade last week, I kind of like our chances there.
Yeah, I do.
So, you know, a lot's being done there. And then it's just the issue of what else we want to do on the state level and how you can do it. And as you point out, the Constitution of South Carolina puts restrictions in place in terms of when the legislature adjourns from their regular session and passes their sign-and-die resolution of what they can take up if they come back. They're restricted to only being able to take up what was in that resolution, and this specifically was not in there. So, as I mentioned a minute ago, they're trying to find a way to maybe use funding as sort of an angle that they can make this germane potentially later this week.
Right. So conversations are going on about how to deal with it.
Absolutely.
Which points to the fact that it's not a lack of will. It's trying to find the pathway to do this. And Attorney General Alan Wilson is actually leading the attorney generals across the country with these lawsuits. They've called on him to be the head of all of the coalition of attorneys general. And so therefore he's got that responsibility. And as you say, they've been very successful in filing these lawsuits and getting the court to come down on these mandates. Now, let me ask you this, because we had this discussion and I don't know, we were talking about what's going to happen when finally these mandates are ruled unconstitutional. We get to the final say. Then are people who got laid off, who do they sue? Do they sue their private company because they were following a mandate that was unconstitutional? Or do they sue the federal government for putting out an unconstitutional mandate? Or do they, or both? Or what happens?
I think the answer is yes.
Okay.
I mean,
everybody.
Look, I think there's going to be a multitude of lawsuits in a multitude of directions. And, you know, it'll be other folks looking on to see which path is the most successful, and that's the way that the rest of the folks are going to go. There are going to be a multitude of lawsuits about this, absolutely. You know, and again, private employers, you know, are one thing. You know, government is another thing. I think those who end up, you know, suing private employers, though, are going to have probably a broader range of causes that they can use for a lawsuit than you would when you work for the government. You know, just because working for the government adds an extra layer of, I don't want to say protection to the employer, if you will, but, you know, there are more restrictions whenever you're working for a government than what you can expect from a private employer. But that's not to say that the government won't be potentially, you know, on the hook here. So, again, I think the answer is yes.
Yeah, I think there will be. And I think people should sue because all of this has been completely unnecessary. And, of course, now you have Mayor de Blasio in New York. We talked about this earlier. And you know, they're putting out private companies, all private companies, have to have their employees vaccinated. Children ages 5 to 11 have to be vaccinated. And there's no testing out. In other words, you can't opt out by saying that you'll be tested. No, you have to be vaccinated. And quite frankly, if the people of New York accept that, then they deserve it. I mean, if that's what the people of New York want, if they're willing to knuckle under to this, what I'm reading is that these companies were completely caught off guard by de Blasio's pronouncement. They didn't let any information out. They just laid this out to them.
Well, this was, I think, has more to do with the fact that, de Blasio is doing a little bit of what we would call virtue signaling here on his way out the door.
Yeah.
And his term ends in about 3 weeks. He's gone. So I find it kind of interesting that he, you know, imposes this broad, most restrictive and onerous mandate that a elected official possibly could do, which, by the way, if you notice in the fine print, it doesn't go into effect for 3 weeks. So basically, he's saying basically the day or two before I'm out the door as mayor, this mandate goes into effect. So basically, he's just lobbed a grenade into his successor's lap
because he knows he doesn't have to deal with
sincere.
It. Well, it is. Right. But now Eric Adams, Mayor Adams, coming in starting in January, has indicated that he's in favor of mandates. So it's possible that they've had some kind of conversation about this and that Adams is going to continue to enforce it. But Adams could come in, since this came from de Blasio, I mean, he could come in effectively and just reverse it, right?
Well, he could. And also, I'll say, though, Adams has been one of the ones who's taken up for the government employee unions, like the firefighters and the police,
right,
who've been pushing back against the mandate on them because, you know, he's seen the impact that it's had in terms of law enforcement.
Yeah.
I think a total of 18 firehouses in the city have been shut down because of the reduction in manpower among firefighters. I mean, that's real-world stuff that can affect your property and your safety. It's ridiculous.
Right. Well, listen, we haven't had a chance to talk since the arguments were made at the Supreme Court on the Dobbs case. Where do you come for? How do you feel about that? I mean, most conservatives are high-fiving, and I'm trying to be cautiously optimistic.
Sometimes it's kind of like, feeling like Charlie Brown with Lucy pulling the football away there just when you're about to kick it, right? I mean, I understand why you'd be that way. And, you know, it's healthy skepticism. And again, arguments are never, it's not a perfect way of looking at how a case is going to go, no doubt about it, because they ask questions sometimes, not to signal where they're coming from, but to try to tease out, details from different lawyers on both sides. But having said that, I go back to, I think, the last conversation we had to pointed to what actually happened, and that was, we saw Roberts kind of looking for a middle way.
Right.
He started to talk about, maybe 15 weeks. What's wrong with 15 weeks being a standard? It's basically what he was saying versus 24 or whatever it is now, which, basically, if that ended up being a prevailing opinion, would totally gut Roe. It wouldn't overturn it, but it would gut it. And you'd have a bunch more, action at the state legislative level going forward. But then you had guys like Kavanaugh just asking wonderful questions. Like, for instance, doesn't someone have to lose here? Either it's the mother or it's the child. You're choosing one or the other, basically. And, which is absolutely right. And that means that at some point somebody's life is potentially being snuffed out. And it's been the child. And basically, then you had Amy Coney Barrett bringing up the wonderful point about, since Roe has been put in place, all 50 states have safe harbor laws now for mothers who want to give up their children. Now, that wasn't the case when Roe was put in. And one of the excuses for Roe was the, quote, burden that parenthood would put on, mothers. Lots changed in all these years. You have justices here now to see that, recognize that are conservative. I think it's highly possible, though, you'll see Roberts siding with the majority, so he ends up writing an opinion potentially versus, say, Clarence Thomas being the most senior judge, in the majority of the opinion.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that he can't squeeze it too tight, because if he does, then he may not be in the majority anymore. See what I mean? So he's on a tightrope here, as far as I can tell.
Well, the thing that's fascinated me is that we talked about that this morning in the first hour. You have Dr. Gretchen Sisson, who's a sociologist at the University of California, San Francisco, and you have Elizabeth Spires, who writes for the New York Times, and you have others who came out over the weekend and attacked adoption and is going after, because they see that Amy Coney Barrett's argument was compelling. And it's very difficult to refute, because you have right now, and I looked this up today, there are 2 million couples waiting to adopt. there are between 18 and 20,000 adoptions every year in the country, and there are 900,000 abortions. Well, if we just do a little simple math here, we could cut the number of couples waiting for adoption in half if we would simply make that the loving option. And so the logic of that is causing people to actually begin to make the argument that adoption is more traumatic to the mother than having an abortion. And I'm just, I'm stunned by it. If you've ever doubted how wed the progressive Democrats are to the concept of abortion, all you have to do is just think in your head that they're saying, well, it's very traumatic for, and Elizabeth Speer, she was actually adopted. So she's making the argument it would have been better for her mother to abort her, the one who's writing the column about, it begins to mess with your mind.
Well, you know, we all, for many, many years, decades in my case, you know, used to listen to Rush Limbaugh. I know that you did a good bit too.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the things that he so often said, and, you know, there was sometimes a lot of hyperbole on purpose, you know, for entertainment value, or sometimes, as he would say, illustrating the absurd by being absurd. And he used to refer to abortion as the sacrament of the left, in the religion of the left.
Yeah.
And basically, that just goes back to just exactly what you just said. I mean, you know, why ignore, you know, an opportunity of adoption like you just pointed out when you have twice as many families that are looking for children, you have abortions that are going on, and why would you even begin to suggest that that's not a better option unless, as you put out, they're so wed to the idea of abortion. It is the sacrament of their religion.
Well, we had somebody argue today on the program that the infant mortality rate is terrible in red states. And my immediate response, so the best way to improve the infant mortality rate is to kill the baby in the womb. And so that way we have a lower infant. Is that really what I'm supposed to get my mind wrapped around here? I just don't get it.
That's logic, Tony. That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. Well, Drew, thanks a lot. Listen, I really appreciate your calls every week. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll give you next week off since we're getting into the Christmas season. And we'll just start back in January. How about that?
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, I appreciate y'all, and y'all have a Merry Christmas season.
You and your family do the same. God bless you. All right, you had a question. You told me before we got into the whole thing with Drew McKissick you wanted to ask me social question.
So this social contract question is a hypothetical. Let me ask you a hypothetical that's never is hypothetical when I ask you a hypothetical question, okay? But here goes. So let's say you live on 4 acres within the city limits, barely, and there's a big cell phone tower that occupies the property adjacent to you back in the woods. It's separated from your house by, you know, 4 acres, two acres of woods or so.
Right.
A crew comes there to add an extra extension on top of that to, you know, infrastructure and all that stuff.
Right.
So they're there, and they're playing rap music extremely loudly, very vulgar language, and you can detect the lyrics on your property, which is 2 acres over.
And you have children.
And your wife texts you and says, can you please call somebody or tell me who to call to address this issue? And you say, what do you say at that point? What do you tell your wife? How are you going to handle this situation? Do you say, just keep the kids inside for today? They'll go away. It's their right to play music like that. What do you say?
Well, it is their right to play music like that. But it's not their right to inflict their right on your right to not have to hear it. So I would walk over there.
You would.
And I would. Mm-hmm. I would go to the first thing I would do. I mean, let's look at it. Matthew 18.
Social contract.
Social contract.
Yep.
Biblically.
Yeah.
You go over and you say, look, we would have a disagreement about the kind of music, but I'm a fan of rock music, but I don't want to play it loud enough that other people have to hear it. I said, the music you're playing has got vulgar statements, words. I have children. I don't really want to hear that stuff either, but I certainly don't want to have to explain to my children what those words are that they don't hear in our house.
Mm-hmm.
So would you just turn the music down so that we don't have to listen to it? If you want to listen to it, I get that. That's your right. But we should have the right to not have it inflicted on us. So would you help us? Would you turn it down? And if they turned it down,
following the hypothetical, let's follow that out. This guy, the guy looks at you and he says, okay.
Okay, then I
and
go
then
away.
Just keeps and you,
I,
then you go away. And
well, actually, I probably would have said, okay, you're going to turn it down, or okay, you agree with what I'm saying, or what does that mean?
Okay.
I mean, I would get a commitment that, yes, we get you. We'll turn the music down. Sorry. We didn't mean to, we just wanted to listen to it as we're working. Then no harm, no foul.
So then let's say you go get in your truck, you drive back to your house, you unload your truck, you're outside, you hear the music continuing. It takes you a half hour to unload your truck.
Right.
Nothing's changed.
Nothing's changed.
What do you do then?
I pick up the phone and I call the police and I say, I have people that is occupying the property next to me that is playing music that is vulgar and loud, and my children are listening to it. I'm having to listen to it. And would you please come? I've asked them. I went and asked them nicely if they would turn it down, and they basically told me to go pound sand by their actions. So would you come over and see if they tell you the same thing, or would you tell them there's a law that says that you can't? We have noise ordinances that says you can't do that.
So
that you're disturbing the peace.
Would an equal option be to go over to them and address them a second time with your camera out and say, I'm documenting this conversation because I'm going to file a complaint with the American Tower Corporation?
Yeah, but I mean, I don't have a problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't sit here and say, oh, I can't believe you did that. No,
But is that consistent with the Karen impulse of, I'm going to get my phone out and I'm going to document this? When something bad happens socially, again, we're talking social contract here. What does it do to the social contract when you have all these people now who have this habit of whipping out their phones and recording things?
Let me just put it this way. I wouldn't do it because I think I've done my due diligence when I say to, I would get my phone out and record the music at my house so that people could hear how loud it is. And then I may walk toward I'd stay on my property, but walk toward them and video and show, here's where the music's coming from. And you can clearly see that I'm in my house and how loud it is, so that you have a record, because you've already confronted them. You've already talked to them. You've given them an opportunity to not be a jerk. And they're going to be jerks because they don't care, or they don't think they have to, or whatever. And so then I think if you want to make a record, I wouldn't go over there.
You wouldn't?
And no, not to video.
Why not? Why does that bother you? Because that's what bothered my wife. She bothered, she wanted me to get him to turn the music down. Oh, did I just say it was my wife? I mean, in this hypothetical situation.
In a hypothetical situation, your wife would have been not wanting the person involved to go video.
Well, she just didn't like the videoing component. She called me woke. She said that's what woke people do.
I would disagree. I don't think that's what woke people do. But I don't, I don't think that was, I wouldn't think to myself, this is going to solve anything. What's my goal here? I don't care if they want to listen to that music. If they want to have a conversation about why it's bad for them to listen to that music, I'll be glad to give them my opinion. But if they're not interested, all I'm interested in right now is protecting my family.
Right.
So I'm not going to go over there and video them.
Do you think
the cops
would actually enforce? Is there a law that they would make those people turn that music down?
I'm in just about every county, you can't blare loud music and disturb your neighbors. You can listen to anything you want, but people, just like you, I think you made the point, people have the right to not have that music inflicted on them when they're just trying to live peacefully.
So when I went up and asked the guy, I said, would you, I'm asking, and these are my words. I'm asking, I'm a nice guy, asking a nice guy to be a nice guy
and a nice thing.
Right. And so he said, I can't turn it down. I don't have control. He said, it's those guys up there in the lift, And I said, okay, could you radio him, ask him to turn it down?
No,
I've already done that. I said, what'd they say? He says, it's a free country. I said, you're right, it's a free country.
So
but what
I
about
should,
my freedom?
Exactly.
Do I have the freedom as an, is it? Am I free to not have to listen to your music? Why
their
does only
argument,
one of us get freedom here?
Their argument is totally false, wrong. I mean, they're thinking, I want my freedom, but you don't get to have yours. That's a progressive view of the world. I want has to be imposed on you. And if you don't like it, then you can lump it because I get to decide what people get to hear.
So no, as I was walking away, which he told me to leave because I didn't have a hard hat on, which I'm sure he was really concerned about my safety, you know, and so because, you know, there was a project going on up there in the air. So I told him I'd leave, and when I did, I got to the end of the driveway, and I turned around, and I had asked him for names so I could report that to the American Tower Corporation, who the crew actually was. He wouldn't give me any names, of course. So I started taking pictures of license plates, you know, so I could have that. He, of course, that really bothered him. He said, "You can't do that. This is private property." I said, no, wait. Remember, it's a free country.
Well, it is a free country, and if you were standing on your property— Uh-huh. While you were taking the pictures,
I was standing on public property. So,
well, or public
the street,
property,
yeah,
the,
I was
street, okay,
on the street.
Okay, then absolutely you can do it. So, you know,
so
I don't,
my question at the end of all that is, though, was I the jerk?
Not really. I don't think you were a jerk for going over there and recording.
You know, I talk about when two jerks meet on the street. There's no ending to that story.
Right.
You know, so
I don't think you. Look, I wouldn't have done it that way. Hmm. I would have gone and talked to him without the camera, mm-hmm. asked him to stop.
Which I did.
Which you did. Mm-hmm. They didn't. Mm-hmm. I would have called the police. Okay. I would have just simply called and said, "Look, I've got a situation out here. I've talked to him nicely. They won't turn the music down. I have children here. There's all kind of vulgar language. Just we can't escape it." Uh-huh. And
we could escape it by staying in the house. Is that really the right answer to the question?
No, it's not, because you should not have to be held hostage in your own house because they want to play their music loud enough for the whole neighborhood to hear it.
So what if the police don't show up, though? What if they say, "We've got bigger fish to fry"? Then do I call Kyle Rittenhouse?
Well, no.
I've got some JBL 100 speakers I'll bring over to your place. We'll have a war.
Do you know what, though? One of my friends, I told him about this, and he said he actually did put on this really conservative holiness music, you know, this just piano and organ stuff, and he put it on a high-powered system. His neighbor was doing this, you know, playing loud music, offensive music, and so he just turned it right back on him and put this conservative Christian music right in. And he said it probably wasn't very Christian of him, but the guy turned his music down. And guess what? They came back on Monday. This crew came back on Monday. No music.
For you?
Yeah. In this hypothetical situation. That's
hypothetically, they came back and no
yesterday,
music.
They,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, then maybe you don't have a problem anymore.
Right.
I mean, and then I wouldn't call the police if you don't have a problem anymore.
Right.
But can they do something? Yes. Hmm. There are laws against that. Hmm. And will they do it? I mean, if they don't, then you've got legitimate beef against the police for not enforcing the law.
Oh, wow. So it's just interesting to me how Christians handle this, because I think Christians handle this different than libertarians handle it, than different than conservatives handle it.
Yeah, I don't. Look, I'm always going to take the option of, can we work on it? Can we work this out?
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm blown off about working it out, then I'm going to say, okay, well, the law's on my side. I hate it, but I'm not going to have my kids sit and listen to this.
But it's interesting. You're appealing to a higher thing than I'm being inconvenienced. I don't like what's happening. This is not just a justice for me thing. This is there's a rule of law here that needs to be respected.
Yes, absolutely. Because that's why
social
we have
contract.
Laws that keep you from having to listen to the vulgar stuff that comes out in most rap music.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what if they started playing Megan Thee Stallion over there? I mean, you couldn't you.
That's
you,
probably what
probably,
they were playing. Man.
You'd probably go over there
awful.
and stop it yourself if that started blaring out for you, because that's a
is
sex
that ever,
education.
Is that
class.
Right though? I mean, is that ever right? I go over there and I'm loaded. I'm a CCP. You know, I go over
there.
I put a bullet in their radio system.
No. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that's what you'd probably want to do. I would never go video somebody if I wasn't prepared to withstand an assault.
You know why? I did? Because I'm just that much tougher than you are.
That's true.
So
that is very true.
They were intimidated by me. You could see the look on their face.
I'm kind of a 5'9"
white guy, clean cut. You know,
I'm the wimp that hides behind the gun. You know, that's me.
Right now, partly clad. Could you turn the music down a little bit? Come on. And here are your hosts, Austin Barker and Dr. Tony Bean.
Yeah, I'm telling you, if I was offending somebody with music, this would be what it would be. It would be John Fogerty, just turned up as loud as I could get
him
to sing.
Did Gary just tell John Fogerty to get off his lawn?
I think he did.
I think he did.
I
heard him say that.
Yeah. But that's okay, because he can come and be on my lawn.
all night.
all night. I have no problem with that. okay.
Oh, hold on. This is awesome. Bill on Facebook, he told him, he just gave me some good advice on the hypothetical we were talking about. He says, tell him if they don't turn the music down, you're going to send Chris over. He'll make ridiculous liberal arguments at him all night long.
Yeah, that would that'd make
that
me
would
comply.
Scare anybody.
There you go. I'm complying. Just don't resort to
all
that.
Right, back to the serious stuff.
I found this story, and when you start thinking about, let me back up here before I even go here. Is there any appetite for either Chris Cuomo or Jesse Smollett? Those are two stories that are dominating the news right now, and I just have zero appetite for them. It's not that Chris Cuomo is getting what he should have gotten. CNN is a hypocritical news network. They're not news. You know, now Chris Cuomo is going to sue CNN. For those of you who don't know, Chris Cuomo got fired from CNN because
nepotism.
While his brother was sending, you know, old people to nursing homes it's just a horrible scandal that they covered up. And you know, the left was perfectly happy to cover over the fact that Andrew Cuomo was sending people to nursing homes that were getting COVID and dying because of a terrible policy. They were willing to let that cover up go. But when he was accused of sexual harassment, that's it. That's the end. We can't have him as governor anymore. So he had to resign. So it turns out Chris Cuomo was having a bromance with his brother on CNN leading up to this. And so the objectivity of the network, which I just have to laugh, the objectivity of CNN is being brought into question. The objectivity of CNN is non-existent. So I'm not sure being outraged about this particular part of the lack of objectivity on CNN's part is any more than anything else that they do every time that they have anybody come on to talk. But it turns out Chris Cuomo was working behind the scenes helping his brother to find out information on women that were accusing him of sexual harassment, was actively engaged in trying to help his brother to get around, overcome, cover over the sexual harassment charges. And that was a bridge too far for CNN, so they fired Cuomo. Well, now Cuomo says that Jeff Zucker, who runs CNN, knew all about what he was doing. And so he's going to sue. He's working on a lawsuit against CNN because they actually knew what he was up to and didn't say a word about it until it all became public and it became an issue and they had to fire him. And you know what? These people deserve each other as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I have no doubt that is it Zucker or Zuckerberg? I think it's Zuckerberg. I have no doubt that Zuckerberg knew about it.
No, Zuckerberg you're talking about Facebook. This is the head of CNN.
Yeah, I know. His name is
Jeff.
Okay.
Jeff Zucker?
Is it Zucker? Because I can't.
Yeah, president of CNN, Jeff Zucker.
Okay, mm-hmm. Jeff Zucker.
Yeah, you were right.
So I was right the first time.
That's
I need to stop correcting myself when I'm right.
Yeah, don't correct yourself anymore.
So Jeff Zucker. Yeah, and do I doubt that he knew? No, I don't doubt it. There's no way that Chris Cuomo was doing all this stuff on the air and Jeff Zucker didn't know about it. I don't think there's much of a way
that Jeffrey Toobin.
He didn't. No, we don't want to do Jeffrey Toobin. Just
what a happy bunch over there.
Yeah, I was because we would have to ban any conversation about Jeffrey Toobin.
Content advisory.
Yes. So, but they knew what's going on. The idea that they didn't know, what's happened is that the curtain's been pulled back, which we've used this illustration before. And the curtain rod's been taken down. The rings have been destroyed. I mean, it's all evident now what CNN really is. And it's not a news network. It's a propaganda arm of the Democrat Party. in particular, but progressives specifically within the Democrat Party. So I find it very difficult to be concerned about what's happened with Chris Cuomo or to see that as some earth-shattering event. But just so as you're listening to this program, it happened. It's an example of how CNN is just disingenuous and hypocritical, but it's just another example. It's not even – maybe it's the most egregious example, but if you didn't know that by now, if this is like a shock to you, then you really haven't been paying attention to what CNN is all about. And I think it would be poetic justice if Jeff Zucker sued successfully by Chris Cuomo because they fired him, and it turns out the CNN knew everything he was up to. That may be the end of that network. I mean, that could actually destroy enough of their credibility, which they don't have any.
So
anyway,
let's see if I can get this right. So now it's Kyle Rittenhouse, it's Nicholas Sandemann, and now Chris Cuomo are all going to share ownership of CNN.
Of CNN. Yeah, that's exactly right. They should be able to just sit around and swap checks, buy each other houses on the coast. Because whatever CNN's got, they should be able to have it. And the other story, and just real quick, and then I'll, is Jesse Smollett. And this guy has mental health issues. I mean, he really does. For him to testify the way he did, there should have been a mental health professional in the courtroom that was available to counsel him during his testimony. Not after, but actually to intervene, to stage a mental health intervention and get Jesse Smollett off the stand. But they didn't do that. So all these stories, they're just sordid, terrible stories about his relationship with these two brothers who he paid then to set up a hoax again. And he's saying it was no hoax, that they were actually attacking him. And yet the story at first was that these were MAGA, people that were, and he was using it against conservatives and Donald Trump. And now he's saying that he was having an affair. He was intimate with one of them, and that they attacked him over that. Well, still, Jesse Smollett is, no matter how you go at it, it was a hoax because the original story was a lie. And he actually testified to that fact on the stand. It was by telling this other tale. So, look, Jesse Smollett, his career should be over. But he's got really serious problems and needs help. Even if he's convicted in perpetrating a hoax, I think the jail time is like 4 or 5 months, something like that. I mean, this is not going to be major other than it's going to be a vindication and whatever. He should be able to be sued by the city to recoup the money that the city spent investigating what was perpetrated to be a hate crime and turned out to be nothing but an opportunity for a B actor to try to get their salary increased by putting themselves out as a victim. I mean, Jesse Smollett understood that if you get victim status in America, then that makes you much more valuable. And so that was kind of the impetus of all of this. Well, I did it again. I feel like Ronald Reagan. Well, there you go again. I lost my story.
We need some Red X therapy for you, because like you got to quit clicking those red. Is it Red X's on the Apple devices?
Yeah,
is that what it is? You got to stop clicking those.
I
red
know.
X's.
I end up going, and then what I do is I see something in a story that interests me, and I click on
you
it.
Close
and
the
then
other tab.
Instead of going back, I close the tab.
Yeah, you are really trigger happy.
I know
that Red X.
I know. Well, the story I can tell you, I'm not going to be able to read exactly what the comment was, because that's what really caught my attention. But in Queensland, Australia, there are people who are waiting for organ transplants.
Hold on. You got to do this rest of this segment in an Aussie accent. Let's hear it. Go.
No, I'm sorry. I can't.
All right, mate.
I can't do that.
Oh, come on.
I'm terrible at doing accents.
Easiest thing in the world.
I can sound like I was raised in Western North Carolina, but that's about the best I can do because I used to talk like that. But in Queensland, they made the decision that they're not going to give organ transplants to people who are not vaccinated.
Why not?
Well, that's the thing. They're saying that we're concerned. This is the thinking that blows my mind. It's the same kind of thinking that says we're going to end the infant mortality rate by killing babies in the womb before they get here.
What was the one over in Germany that in order to have an autopsy done, you had to get, like, before you got euthanized, you had to have the COVID vaccine. I'm not making this stuff up.
No. I think you're right. I'm going to put Queensland in here and see if I can actually, because I want to get the quote was just terrible, because it was talking about health care. And it says, we're concerned about the health care of our patients. And so, therefore, we believe that a person who's in need of an organ transplant should have to have the vaccination. And I'm like, wait a minute. They're going to die if they don't get the transplant.
Right.
So you want to not give them the transplant because you're afraid they're going to get COVID and die? Is that the alternative? Is that why you're concerned about their health care? I mean, I guess maybe going into surgery and having an organ transplant opens you up to COVID.
There's been tons of research done on that.
On the fact that organ transplants lead to COVID? Yeah, I'm sure that's out there. We just need to look it up. So I'm fascinated by the way that progressives don't see the fallacy in their own worldview when it's right in front of them. That they can't see, okay, we're going to protect the health care of our transplant patients by denying them the one thing that would save their life because we want them to be vaccinated against COVID.
See, that's just superimposing a political agenda and calling it health care.
Exactly. That's just like calling abortion health care for women.
Demonizing adoption.
Exactly. Then you're demonstrating the fact that you really don't care about the health care for women, because abortion is a violent thing. It's a very difficult process for women, chemical abortions in particular, because they force miscarriages, a lot of them. Well, all of them, actually. I mean, it's contraceptives that actually prevent it hardens the uterine wall so that the egg can't attach itself, or it prevents the coming together. That's back to Hobby Lobby. You know, when they wanted to, they weren't saying that they wouldn't provide, their insurance wouldn't provide for contraception.
Just they were saying abortifacient
contraception, yep, that actually deals with the fertilized egg.
Right.
After the point that I'm making is the illogic of progressives, even in healthcare, when they think that the COVID shot is more important, to be vaccinated is more important than getting a life-saving organ. Through transplant, if you're actually on the transplant list and it's your turn, then okay, if you're not willing to get vaccinated, we're not going to give you the transplant. So that elevates.
So basically that's saying drop dead.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Get the COVID vaccine or drop dead.
And the COVID vaccine ostensibly is designed to help you not drop dead. So you can drop dead if you don't get it.
Yeah.
There's the new logic of the healthcare system. Yep. All right, that's all the time we've got for that kind of logic today. It's about, my mind's about blown anyway.
I'm going to ask Tony a bonus question on the podcast today. Yeah. If you want to get that, go download the podcast. Give us a good rating and review. Thank you for all your support for the show. We appreciate it.
We do appreciate it on Facebook and on the podcast.
And on the radio.
See you tomorrow.
Tony, I taught teenagers, still do to some extent, mm-hmm, and one of the questions that I found that they had a lot was, particularly in relation to apologetics, what happens if I get into a conversation with an unbeliever, particularly, you know, one of those atheists that likes to post YouTube videos owning Christians and dismantling their arguments? What happens if I get into a conversation like that and they ask me a question that I don't know the answer to? Have you interacted with that question at all?
You tell them that you don't know the answer, but you'll be glad to find out and get back to them. I mean, I think honesty, the last thing you want to do is try to bluff through the answer of a question that you really don't know the answer to. You just need to be honest and say, look, you've asked me a question that I believe there's an answer to, but I don't know what it is. So give me some time. Let me research it, and I'll come back to you. I'll get back to you.
I saw some videos. I like looking at these videos. There was actually a Christian out evangelizing or, you know, handing out literature or whatever on a college campus and was approached by one of these, you know, what I'll call an atheist troll. And they came up with these Old Testament law Deuteronomy questions. You know, God said to kill this, and you know, what about all this? The person just kind of stuttered and stammered and couldn't really answer the question. And of course, that you know ended up on YouTube looking right. Badly, as though Christians didn't have an answer for these types of questions. This is what I told my students to say, and you tell me if this is a good response or not. I said, think about why you're out there. Okay, you're out there to evangelize. You're out there to share the gospel with people who are interested in hearing about the gospel. This person that comes up to you is not interested in hearing the gospel. So this is the question that I asked them. And I've asked people, trolls, this question before. I said, if I could answer your questions to your satisfaction today, would you be ready to receive the gospel and make a profession of faith? And then you have to filter out their answer. If it's yes, if they say yes, but you don't feel like it's sincere, you know, they're just saying yes because that's the only way that the conversation is going to continue. If they say no, then they say, well, you know what, I would love to stand here and talk to you, but the reason that I came out here today was to share the gospel. And so this is not a conversation that I came out here to have. So, you know, pardon me, see you later. What do you think? Does that work?
I mean, whatever works for you, I guess, in that situation. I just don't think that's completely genuine. And I think people will figure that out pretty quick. Hmm. I mean, if you don't know the answer to a question, mm-hmm. it's not your job to know the answer to every single question.
And that's the pressure that these people feel is just like, but what if I don't know the answer?
Then just say, I don't know the answer. I know the answer to my salvation, mm-hmm. and I know the answer to your salvation. Mm-hmm. And I'll be glad to share that with you. Mm-hmm. But the question that you have asked me specifically, I don't know enough information to give you a good answer, but I will follow up. I will look at this and I'll come back and give you a good answer.
How about that?
I mean, I think that's genuine. I mean, I think it's real. And I think other ways of dealing with that are kind of dodging the issue. But look, there are hard questions in mm-hmm. apologetics. Mm-hmm. And there are some questions that don't have ready answers. So, you know, I don't think you have to feel depressed or feel bad if somebody asks you a question that you can't immediately answer, that you need to reflect on. Because these are, like we say, apologetics questions are difficult.
Well, life is complex. Mm-hmm. And so we would expect some of the answers to hard questions to be both difficult and complex.
Right. And so I don't think you're under obligation to feel pressure that if you're being asked to engage in an area that you're not sure about, that you should try to force that answer. Just be honest. And just say, look, I'm not sure. I'm confident that there's an answer to your question, mm-hmm. and I'd like for you to give me some time to be able to come up with an answer.
I appreciate you taking the time to answer one of my questions.
No problem.